time for the E21 Go Sports Podcast. Now, here's your host, Easton Durant.
Welcome to E21 Go Sports. I'm Easton Durant, and in today's episode, I'll be talking about NFL, NBA, and MLB playoff news. To start this off, San Francisco 49ers cornerback Richard Sherman said Wednesday that he will apologize to Baker Mayfield for wrongfully saying that the Cleveland Browns quarterback had refused to shake his hand before the coin toss on Monday Night Football. Sherman said that the snub had fueled him during the Niners' 31-3 win over the Browns. In a video on Tuesday, however, showed the two shaking hands at midfield. Sherman backed up today, saying he would be reaching out to Mayfield to apologize. He said, quote, "It's definitely my bad. I never want anybody to have to deal with some stuff that they didn't do. And so, you know, the questions that he's going to get and the annoying nonsense questions about some stuff that happened in the game that's already been, you know, sure, he'll get an apology for that. I'll probably reach out to him via text or social media to actually get a hold of him and talk to him on the phone. He definitely deserves an apology, and that's my bad on that." After today's practice, Mayfield says he hasn't checked his phone yet, but it was, quote, "nice of Sherman to say that he would apologize." He said, "I know what I did. That's the one time the camera and something recording me has gone in my favor." Mayfield said he never attempted to show any disrespect toward Sherman, said, quote, "I respect him and who he is as a player, has been for a while. In no way did I mean it like that." Sherman said earlier today that he was humored with how much attention the story had received. He said, quote, "I've said my piece about it. I've got to have a conversation with him, and then I'm going to be done with it. It's just funny. It got so big. I was like, man, I thought the football game was that they watched it, but I guess it's a soap opera." Sherman said that he may have remembered the moment differently, or could have described it more accurately. He finished saying, "Sometimes you remember things a little differently than it happened. Obviously, it still motivated me the same way." Oakland Raiders linebacker Vontaze Burfict appeal of a season-long suspension for his helmet-to-helmet hit by Colts tight end Jack Doyle has been denied, meaning he will sit out for the rest of the season. The league announced the decision of appeals officer Derek Brooks on Wednesday. Joint was appointed jointly by the NFL and the NFLPA. Burfict was ejected in the second quarter of the Raiders' Week 4 31-24 win late last month, but he was initially flagged for hitting Doyle in the head across the middle, but the officials conferred Burfict was thrown out. The league said that Burfict will not be paid during the suspension, which covers the postseason as well. The league also cited his repeated violations of unnecessary roughness rules in handing out the longest suspension ever for an on-field incident. The suspension will reportedly cost Burfict more than $1.1 million in salary and per-game active roster bonuses. NFL Vice President of Football Operations Jay Runnan wrote a letter to Burfict explaining the decision when the suspension was announced September 30th. He said in the letter, "There was no mitigating circumstances on this play. Your contact was unnecessary, flagrant, and should have been avoided. For your actions, you were penalized and disqualified from the game. Following each of your previous rule violations, you were warned by me and each of the jointly appointed officers that future violations would result in escalated accountability measures. However, you have continued to flagrantly abuse rules designed to protect yourself and your opponents from unnecessary risk." While with the Cincinnati Bengals, Burfict had one suspension reduced from 5 games to 3 in 2017, but he was unable to get a reduction this time. His punishment is by far the biggest for an on-field play, topping 5 games Tennessee's Albert Haynesworth got in 2006 for kicking and stomping on Cowboys center Andrew Goodrow's face, leading to 30 stitches. Burfict is a multiple offender of this, and he is usually called out for his unnecessary roughness and unnecessary tackling when the plays are done. He has he injured Antonio Brown a couple years ago on a hit late in the season. Burfict was also fined $112,000 last season for hits on Brown and James Conner in a game against Pittsburgh. Moving over, Travis Kelce said he regretted shoving offensive corner Eric Bieniemy on the sideline during a moment of frustration in Sunday's loss to the Indianapolis Colts. He said, "We're good. Me and Coach Bieniemy have a very close relationship. I love him. He's helped me out tremendously as a person, as a professional, and I'm sure he'll keep doing that throughout the rest of my career. I love that guy. That will never change. I appreciate him being on my tail to get me going." As far as what happened on the sideline, sometimes you get a little heated with your brothers or your coaches. Kelce shoved him on the sideline after he dropped a difficult but catchable pass early in the game. Two had to be pulled apart. Kelce by guard Larian Donner-Vitarvith. Bieniemy by tackle Cam Irving. Kelce soon returned to hug the OC. He continued saying, "He's like a father figure in terms of being there for me on the field. We're wired a little bit of the same when it comes to our competitive edge. It's something immediately I regretted, and I just wanted to make it good and let him know that, you know what, I'm ready to rock and roll for you." Kelce was frustrated at other points during the 19-13 loss, shouting more than once at officials after an opponent wasn't penalized for pass interference. He had problems controlling his temper during games earlier in his career. He was ejected from a 2016 game against the Jacksonville Jaguars for picking a penalty flag off the ground and throwing it out at an official. He said, "I haven't felt like that in a while. That's definitely something I've been thinking about a lot. Just how to handle a lot of those situations. Looking back, seeing how I connected the dots after making a frustrating play, and how to kind of narrow in and be able to attack on the next play with a clear mind." He's continued saying, "It's football. It's not always going to go our way. So I've just got to maintain the level of focus and level of excitement that I have for this game." Quarterback Patrick Mahomes said that he felt no need to calm Kelce during the game. He said he's played this game for a long time and he understands how to have success. Obviously, I'm going to try and pump him up and have him ready on every single play because he can get open on every single play. He knows how to handle this game. He knows how to have success. I'm going to let him go through what he needs to go. What he needs to go through in order to do that. Moving over to NBA news. Chris Paul, who was acquired from the Rockets trade, along with first-round picks for longtime Thunder star Russell Westbrook, was joined by a pair of other guards in Oklahoma City's starting lineup, which were Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the centerpiece of the LA Clippers trade that sent the Thunder and the Paul George deal, and Dennis Schroeder, who played along Paul as Oklahoma City emphasized ball movement. The Thunder scored 66 points on 63.4% shooting in the first half, assisting on 15 of 26 buckets. Paul, who had 6 points, three rebounds, 4 assists, and 5 turnovers in 17 minutes before sitting out in the second half, said, "A spirit was right and the ball was moving. When you practice like that, you always wonder if it's going to translate to the game. For tonight, it did." Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 21-year-old with maybe star potential in the future, played well in his Thunder debut with 24 points on 7 of 12 shooting. Schroeder, OKC's sixth man last season, had 13 points on 5 of 6 shooting and dished out 5 assists. Paul also said, "We all have talent in that we can create for each other. It just makes the game easier for you when you have multiple guys that can handle the ball." Billy Donovan didn't commit to starting the three-point guards together on a regular basis, but he liked the look of the lineup. He said, quote, "All three of those guys are really important and they're drivers of our offense because they're smart. They have a really good feel of how to play and they're unselfish. They've got to be the catalyst to moving the basketball. Putting them out there, my feeling was to get them comfortable playing with each other, get them playing with with a good pace and tempo and speed. And I thought we came out to start the game like that. Moving over to MLB news, the Oakland A's could move to Las Vegas. MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred warned city officials that the A's could relocate to Las Vegas if the city didn't drop its lawsuit to stop Alameda County from selling its share of the Coliseum to the team. Manfred said yesterday that Las Vegas came up during a meeting with Schaefer, but there were no plans for the A's to move. Manfred told the Las Vegas Journal, the Las Vegas Review Journal, in a recent meeting with the mayor of Oakland, I did mention Las Vegas in the context of pointing out that the A's might have to relocate if a new stadium can't be built in Oakland. There is, however, no plan to move to Las Vegas. Oakland and the Alameda County share ownership of the Coliseum. The city wants to sell its half of the stadium to Oakland instead of the A's. The San Diego Chronicle reports that the city can't match the A's offer of $85 million for the venue. City Councilman Larry Reed said this week that Manfred had made the suggestion that Las Vegas could be a possible relocation site for the A's meetings with city officials last week. Schaefer said in an interview, the reports of that are accurate. Las Vegas is the city that came out of his mouth. Oakland, who will soon lose its NFL team, the Raiders, to Las Vegas, possibly as soon as 2020. So Manfred's choice of possible relocation city was meant to strike a nerve. Obviously, he chose his city wisely as far as exposing a pain point that all Oaklanders feel about losing our sports team. Oakland had sued Alameda County to block its sale of its share of the Coliseum to the A's, and a judge issued a temporary restraining order last week, blocking the transaction. The A's, who want to build a new stadium at Howard Terminal on the waterfront and redevelop the land around the Coliseum, was hoping it would help subsidize the cost of a privately owned new stadium. A's president Dave Cavill said last week that this franchise was blindsided by the restraining order being granted. He said, I will say, though, that I absolutely see a path to a new ballpark right at Howard Terminal, as well as really giving the A's the opportunity to do a special community-serving development out of the Coliseum, as well as to maintain that a background plan. I see this path. I'm confident we will get there. Sorry, I accidentally said that Dave Cavill said that, but Schaefer said that. Moving over to other MLB news, the Rays defeated the Astros in a kind of a 4-1 victory. It was a tough victory. Nobody really expected the Rays to win that game, and now they're setting up for a game 5. On Thursday, that they could have a chance to move on to the ALCS. Verlander got the loss, and Astros manager asked ace Justin Verlander to do something he had never done before. It might be a while before he asked him to do that again. Not that he regrets anything. Verlander was taken out after 3 2/3 inning in Game 4 of the AL Division Series. He allowed 4 runs, 3 in the first inning and 7 hits, including 2 home runs. The Astros trailed 4-0 when he was pulled from the game after walking Tampa Bay's G-Man Choi in the fourth, much to the delight of Tropicana Field. Verlander only threw 84 pitches. Verlander said, "Obviously not the way you would script it. It sucks." The Rays went on to win 4-1, force a decisive fifth game at Minute Maid Park in Houston on Thursday. While the Astros led the series down to a 2-1 entering Tuesday, Hinch tabbed Verlander for Game 4 start after the Astros' 10-3 loss in Game 3 on Monday. That meant Verlander was starting on 3 days rest, something he had never done in his career. Verlander threw 7 shutout innings against the Rays in Game 1, though. Hinch said, in the postseason, you ask somebody to do something that's not normal. It's always a little nerve-wracking, but he felt great and made a lot of really good pitches and got a lot of swing and misses. But the Rays jumped on Verlander from the start. Tommy Pham homers left field to open the scoring. The Rays tacked on two more runs that first inning, and Verlander needed 32 pitches to escape further damage. This is the most pitches Verlander had thrown in the first inning since he joined the Astros in 2017. Verlander blamed it on bad slider, inconsistent control. I felt like the velocity was there, but the control wasn't, and the slider wasn't. Mix that in with a good approach from the Rays in the first. In his final inning, Verlander gave up a solo home run to Willie Adams on a slider that broke into the middle of the plate waist high. The walk to G-Man Choi was a fitting end to an outing in which Verlander struggled to locate his pitches. He threw strikes on just half of his 54-seam fastballs. With a fastball missing the zone, the Rays teed off Verlander off-speed pitches. The Rays were 6-for-12 against Verlander's off-speed offerings with two home runs, two doubles, and seven hard-hit balls. But for all his struggles, Verlander refused to point to his short rest as an excuse. He said, "I don't know what to expect, and it wasn't anything onto it. Not expecting anything, I was expecting to be normal. The low-hanging fruit is to sit there and say this was a short rest, and that's the reason why. I don't think so. I felt good. Body felt physically. I didn't execute the way I needed to. Really, the slider was the worst it's been all year. I needed something to go our way. And when I make mistakes, they really capitalize them with the runners on base, and it killed us." Rays manager Kevin Cash thought that the real factor in the quick turnaround from his club's encounter with Verlander was a heightened familiarity more so than Verlander's physical state. Cash said, "I think the familiarity helps. He's still the best. There's no denying this. But 4 days, 5 days later, some of those pitches maybe replayed a little bit, and we were able to have some quality at-bats and hit the ball hard." Whether the short rest plan played into Verlander's off night, the Astros still have a couple of security blankets to keep them warm on their flight back to Houston. They have home field advantage in the presence of Game 5, starting Gerrit Cole, who hasn't lost since May 22nd. A string of starts that reached 22 with his win in game two. Now we go to the second thing. Gerrit Cole has won his last 14 starts, and he blew away the Rays in game two of the ALDS with 15 strikeouts. Gerrit Cole is enjoying one of his most dominating stretches in recent memory. He went 17-0 with a 1.69 ERA in his past 23 starts. But if the Astros want to keep their season alive, they'll need one more gem from him in the winner-take-all Game 5 against the Rays at Minute Maid Park. Alex Bregman said, "He's an ace. We look forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be fired up and looking to play well as we can to get behind him." Astros manager A.J. Hinch was so confident with Cole waiting in the wings of Game 5 of the ALDS that he rolled the dice in Game 4, brought back Justin Verlander on 3 days rest. If it didn't work out, he would be able to brush back the setback, knowing Cole was available at Minute Maid Park 2 days later. Perhaps that's why the Astros, whose World Series or bust expectations, will be on the line against a Rays team that dropped games 1 and 2 in Houston. Remain confident despite the heavy weight of their goals hanging in the balance. Hinch said, "I love that we're here and the way we got here, and nerve-wracking just because you don't want to get a Game 5. We fought all year to have a better record and win our division to get this particular game at home. And they've got to come into our house and beat us. With Cole on the mound, I don't know who would be more confident than us." But one thing that the Astros have to be able to defeat is the Rays. The biggest key to success has been a pitching staff that led the American League with a 3.65 ERA in the regular season and has stepped up in the postseason. Holding the Rays to 4 combined runs between Game 3 and 4 of the ALDS. also timely hitting in the development of young players like Austin Meadows and Willie Adams, who have also played into their successful season. Also, they're the underdogs. They're not even supposed to be here. They're a wild card team. They won in the wild card. They're not even supposed to hang with the top dogs as the Astros. The Astros were supposed to just walk all over the Rays and just go into play whoever won the other side of the ALDS. But the Rays would not let them have it because they felt like they've had an underdog year all year. Another thing is, because of the camaraderie inside the clubhouse, Rays pitcher Blake Snell said, "We just enjoy playing with each other a lot. I think that what makes us so special and so dangerous, because once things happen, I feel like it just leads to where we can get hot pretty quick. And then the dugout's going insane, and then the bullpen is locking down. And that's kind of how it happens, honestly. Talent is what the Rays front office ultimately looks for in evaluations of its players. But the Tampa Bay Brain Trust also emphasized adding quality personality to his young core over the winter. Guillermo Hurrieta, who wasn't on the roster for the AL wildcard or ALDS, was acquired from Seattle last November. He leads the way with his energy, dances, and dugout celebrations. Adams greets his teammates outside the dugout whenever they hit a home run. Seemingly everyone on the roster has a unique way of greeting their teammates, which isn't unusual for a baseball team, but the fact that the Rays have sustained the camaraderie despite having 57 players appear for them this season is impressive. Brandon Lowe said, "It was that way during spring training. We kind of had to mesh together in spring training and get to know each other. A lot of it was new people being called up in trades and stuff like that. But we came together really fast, really quickly, and I don't think this is a surprise to anyone in our locker room, and I don't think we're done playing yet." Moving on, last week, the Yankees set James Paxton, Masahiro Tanaka, and Luis Severino as their starting pitchers for the ALDS. As they were rewarded with a 3-game sweep of the Twins, the Yankees aren't ready to reveal their plans to the ALCS. Boone said, "We haven't decided yet. It may or may not factor who we're playing, but those will be one of the conversations we'll have over the next couple days. I'm considering everything right now." Paxton struck out 8 over 4 2/3 innings in his postseason debut during Game 1 of the ALDS, only allowing 3 runs and 5 hits with a walk. He was 1-1 with 6.0 ERA and 2 starts against the Astros this season, and he was 0-1 with a 3.0 ERA against the Rays. Tanaka has continued to build on an excellent postseason resume in Game 2, firing 5 innings of 1-run ball, 3-hit ball to pick up a victory against Minnesota. The owner of a 1.54 ERA and 35 playoff innings, Tanaka has had no record in a 2.25 ERA and 2 starts against Houston. The right-hander was 2-0 with a 1.59 ERA and 4 starts against Tampa Bay. Severino would be on regular rest for Saturday's ALCS, having worked 4 scoreless innings in the deciding ALDS game. The righty has not faced the Astros or Rays during his three-start regular season. If it was up to me, I would not start Severino. I mean, I would give it to Paxton and then just go back up the order there. Paxton struggled against the Twins, and I would just give him a little bit more of a break just to be able to recoup himself and be able to be ready for when he's next needed. I think it's between Paxton and Tanaka, one of the two, because they're the two best pitchers on the team. They're both amazing players and amazing pitchers. Aaron Boone said, "We feel like one of our strengths of our team is our 12 to 13 pitchers as a whole, but I also feel very confident and really good about our starters. There's going to be some opportunities probably for them to pitch deeper into games. I think in this bit last series, I feel like we got 3 quality outings, albeit a little bit shorter. There will inevitably be that game where one or more of our guys will get a bit deeper in the game and set us up better for the rest of the series. Well, thanks for listening to E21 Go Sports. As always, I'm Easton Durant. You can subscribe to us on YouTube at E21 Go Sports and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at E21 Go Sports. Thank you.
You've been listening to the E21 Go Sports Podcast, a production of Cogger Podcast Network.